medical lady, Mushi, you are before a subcommittee of the Portfolio Committee on Communications in the National Assembly. The rules of the National Assembly allows the committee to also set up subcommittees to focus on specific matters. So this subcommittee focuses on the appointment process for ICASA councillors. So in this regard, I'm not going to waste any more time, but introduce briefly the members. I'm sure you have seen some going out to take a comfort break, but they're coming in now. But I just thought that for sake of time, we should at least dispense with formalities. I will introduce them quickly. Thereafter, would allow you a brief introduction that leads you to your also your presentation in the 10 minutes allocated to you maximum. We'll then, after that, allow each member to engage with you maximum 5 minutes, and the 5 minutes include your responses to what the member would have probably raised. And that will then lead us towards the closure of the interaction. Please relax. It's an engagement. We want to learn from you. You'll also probably learn from the questions from members in that score. Having said that, on my right, you have Honorable Kubeka. Next to her, it's Honorable Mulala. Next to Honorable Mulala, you have Honorable Faku. Then it's Honorable Majozi, followed by Honorable Fandam. Then you have Honorable Dr. Ndlozi, and Honorable Maneli Cherry. Right. So having done that, as I said, without a waste of time, I'll then give you an opportunity to briefly introduce yourself, and I can confirm that members also have had access to your CV and so on. Right, thank you. And then you get straight to the presentation without a break.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Dikeledi Catherine Mushi. I've been in the telecoms industry for the past 22 years, specifically and in the regulatory affairs division, doing work around consumer protection, resolution of customer complaints, risk assessment, compliance management, and acting also as on an advisory capacity within the company on regulations. Also doing policy analysis within the regulatory division of my employer. My presentation is on the overview of institutional approaches to telecommunications regulations as informed by the ITU in relation to the National Development Plan and the Integrated National Integrated Information Communications Technology Policy Review Report as directed by the subcommittee. With reference to the ITU handbook, there are key institutional design principles that are recommended to guide the establishment of regulators. The first being that regulators must be perceived by the industry to be structurally, financially, and functionally independent. Regulators must be accountable, transparent, and predictable. They must have the expertise to assess and make sound judgment on both technical and industry-specific issues. Regulators must take into account various viewpoints and interests. This balance must be reflected in the institutional structure and in the system of checks and balances. And the institutional design, internal structures, and administration must be sufficiently flexible to allow the regulator to respond to market realities. The handbook further indicates that there's an institutional structure and an institutional design that is followed in the establishment of the regulators. On the institutional structure, for the purposes of separation of powers, there are three tiers, one being the policy development, which is run by government, a ministry or an executive branch. And then there's a regulatory layer, which is separate regulatory authority. And then the last layer being the service provision layer, which is run privately or commercially. This is the current structure as we see today in South Africa, where we've got the Ministry of Communication, GTPS, and the regulator ICASA and your licensees. Then in the design elements, the handbook shows that there are four types of arrangements. One being a single sector regulator, where this regulator has the sole function of overseeing just one sector, in this case telecoms, and broadcasting and IT issues being the responsibility of other government departments. The second arrangement is where there's a converged regulator, where all communication services, that's telecoms, broadcasting, media and postal services, are under one agency, and this is the current ICASA arrangement. And then there's a multi-sector regulator which oversees telecoms and other industry sectors, but with a common economic and legal characteristics. And this arrangement would probably be an example of a competition regulator which regulates across sectors, whether you're in the bread industry or car industry. If it's competition issues, then the competition regulator will prevail. The last one is no specific telecommunications regulatory authority being established, but it's an arrangement where regulation relies on an application of, say, for example, competition or antitrust rules, rather than on detailed sector-specific regulations. And then where there are disputes, there'll be a judge maybe in charge of enforcing the kind of regulation. But this last one, it is not commonly used. It's usually preferred in countries that are quite advanced, where self-regulation has gotten the market better organized. Then the National Development Plan also reflects on the fact that 15 years ago, when the sector regulation, sector law was put in place, it is only fitting that we analyze its effectiveness today. Well, this was in 2015, to say that we need to go back and look at how the regulator or the regulatory arrangement has been working and what needs to change going forward according to the market conditions. And they advocate for a sufficient political will to support regulation if we must have an efficient working regulator. There must be independent regulatory autonomy from the state and the industry interest so that the regulator is able to carry out its mandate. Then there must be public accountability through transparency and parliamentary oversight. Obviously, ICASA being a public institution, it needs to be accountable to public funds, for example. Then there must be transparent decision making, where ICASA publishes its reports and the information memorandum. Now lately in the spectrum licensing process was published, just to engage with the industry, the public and interested parties in terms of where the process is going or how it's going to unfold. And there must be an address of inherent conflict between the role of the state, where the state, you know, there must be clear separation of powers between policy and regulation. Adequate institutional and human capacity is necessary to formulate regulations from the ICASA side, and the state to have adequate capacity and capability to formulate effective policies. And it further says that to improve regulatory effectiveness, there must be far-reaching reviews of current regulations and reform of the institutional design of today. There must be an exploration of further consolidation of regulators where necessary, And ICASA, there must be a periodic regulatory impact review to show if current regulations are working well or not. Then the National Integrated ICT Policy Review Board also came with recommendations to address the public concerns about the effectiveness of different entities and the lack of coordination between different institutions, duplication of resources, and ineffective oversight accountability. And they recommend that there must be a balance between independence and accountability. And usually we speak of independence of ICASA in terms of its legal status, structural independence, its financial independence, its functional independence, yet also being accountable to government. Then they also recommend parliamentary oversight that must be strengthened to ensure independence from political and stakeholder influence and accountability that focuses on the impact of regulation and transparent decision-making and the authority entrusted on ICASA. And there must be a consistent approach for co-responsibilities and interlinked regulatory decisions. This is across sectors, across regulators. State aid must not give regulators an unfair advantage. The purpose is for ICASA to fulfill set objectives and ensure public value for money. So governance and institutional structures must be sufficiently flexible to adapt to meet future requirements and rapidly changing environment. Lastly, the key imperatives for related to ICASA. ICASA's institutional design and arrangement need to be reviewed and adapted to the digital future. ICASA's functional independence needs to be addressed through requisite institutional capacity, which must be built and or strengthened. ICASA's regulations must guarantee consistency in regulatory decisions. Institutional constraints to effective regulation must be addressed to clarify regulatory roles, responsibilities, powers, and accountabilities. A closer working relationship between regulators to coordinate and avoid institutional duplication and conflict, and an update of related legislation and subsidiary regulations to be relevant to today's market. That's the end of my presentation. Thank you.
Thanks, Ms. Dikeledi Mushi, for the presentation in time. I'll now look at members to engage with the presentation. At this point, I'll start with Honorable Machozi, given an apology.
Hello, Ms. Mushi. The chairperson caught me by surprise. He does not, he has never started with me. Okay. Thank you for the presentation. Yeah, it was informative and very precise. And then, so my question would be, how do you think would ICASA strengthen its role in trying to ensure that fair practice prevails over the unfair competition in the market with regards to data service market inquiry report?
Thank you, Honorable Majosi. That question reflects on what I mentioned in co-regulation, where ICASA needs to have a clear, its responsibility in this regard being supported by the empowering provisions of the ECA. What has happened, in my view, is that there is concurrency of jurisdiction between the two regulators, and there is a memorandum of agreement between these two institutions. ICASA has a mandate to regulate competition. ICASA has a mandate to lower the cost of data. However, the Competition Commission sits with the mandate also to regulate competition. Now, it is my view that there was supposed to have been, I'm not privy of, you know, what happened before, but there should have, it was supposed to have been an agreement on how the market inquiry was conducted in terms of unfair, you know, ineffective competition with regards to what leading to unfair or high cost of data. However, ICASA's mandate still remains, making sure that access to electronic communications data is cheaper and all of that. So it's my view that ICASA is empowered by the ECA to regulate in that space. However, it seems there was no clear roles and responsibilities in terms of who must now implement the recommendations. It, for me, my view is that the ComCom should have recommended based on its findings, and ICASA should have then found a way to make sure that it implements the decision to raise the data costs.
In your own view, I want to tell me your own view. Let's say the spectrum is released, and what makes you think that the data cost will reduce, and especially considering the fact that there are big players in the market, and there are those who are still small players in the market, and how do we then bring them in to make sure that they have a role to play as well in the spectrum?
Thanks for the question. So the net effect of the release of spectrum is unknown, especially because there is no study that informs this process. So my view is that spectrum is going to be released. The net effect is only going to be seen in 3 to 5 years based on, you know, the current proposal on the table. It is also my concern that the debate has always been that operators have had to spend a lot of money to extend the services. Now, with the release of the spectrum, they're going to now have more capacity to roll out cheaper. Then the net effect must be lower data cost. But that net effect will only be seen in 3 to 5 years' time. Now, if ineffective competition on the services layer, if I understood your question well, because the infrastructure then would be laid, then competition needs to now be seen on the services layer. And bringing the other players, you know, apart from your big players, it is my understanding that that was the purpose of the ON, to say, let's give access to other players so that they can force competition, they can force prices down. But whether they will have the requisite skills, they will have, you know, that capacity that the older operators have, is going to have a, there must be a balancing act of some sort. But I would think that that is where now ICASA has to, with the help also maybe of the ComCom, needs to then go and review at some point to say, at what point, maybe say 2 years' time, go back and review and see if there is indeed a reduction of cost, and not a forced reduction of cost, you know, but that based on the current now resources, we can see a reduction of cost.
Honorable Fundam. Then we now take Honorable.
Okay, thank you, Chair. Thank you, Ms. Mushe, for your presentation. I'm looking at your presentation. Somehow, I'm a bit confused. Maybe I need you to clarify this to me. You talk about the role of the regulator, which you say that the public accountability through transparency, transparency and specialized parliament oversight. And again, on the principle of your institutional review, you are saying that parliament oversight to strengthen to ensure independence from political and stakeholder influence. Can you try and clarify for me what you mean? So my presentation is based on what the NDP recommended for institutional review. And there they are saying public accountability is because ICASA uses public funds to regulate. So it must publish its work, it's to demonstrate that it is regulating in the public interest, because it is not easy sometimes for the public to know what the regulator is doing. So with, through publication of its reports, progress to date, then the public has knowledge of what is in the public domain. But also that with regards to parliamentary oversight, same principle that ICASA still has to go back and say, this is my public mandate, accessibility, connectivity to all. This is my effort, for example, on the end user and subscriber, where I've instituted data rules and said, you know, there must be data roll over. But if ICASA does not report on such interventions, it may be seen not to be doing enough. And there has been talk that ICASA is not effective, but not also looking at the underlying, you know, issues that have led to certain things. So my understanding is that public accountability to public funds and also to its mandate as a public regulator, a constitutional institution that must for public rights and access and all that, and then accountability being also that it needs to report back to Parliament to show its efforts.
Okay. You are talking about underlying issues. Can you give me an example what you mean? But also the political influence, what do you mean by that? If you can try and clarify me.
Okay. So political influence, ICASA is not it has been established according to the constitution of the country and according to, so it's under the legal framework of this country. Now, politics not as in, how do I put this in, but the political agenda of the country that says we want to advance, you know, economics, and we want to, as the politics of the country that says we want to advance better living conditions, better access to services, and then with that now, ICASA has to strike the balance of saying, here's a market, here's now the industry leading with some of the market issues. How do I then pull the political mandate and balance it out with making the market efficient and, you know, competitive enough? So that's my understanding of what this means.
Okay. What do you think are the objectives of the report?
Sorry. What do you think are the objectives of the National Integrated ICT Policy White Paper?
Amongst others, it was to open up the market, you know, by making sure that infrastructure does not belong to a certain operator, but that the network is interoperable, it's open access, everybody can just plug in and play. Because the cost of laying out infrastructure for your smaller players is quite a big cost. So to open up the market, but to also enhance rapid deployment, for example, for where you operators must go lay infrastructure, issues that deal with the way users, you know, access to the roads to lay fiber, for example. Also to enhance universal service and access, to address the issues of spectrum,
to also speak to the future of communications in this country, where we are now moving from the analog days to the digital space, and what does that mean for normal citizens, and how access to connectivity should be enhanced so that everybody can benefit in this new digital era.
Given an opportunity to serve in the council, what are you bringing? What are the challenges that have been in the past council? What do you think are you bringing that is new?
What is new is I'm bringing the operator experience into ICASA. The understanding of the impact of regulation on the market. You know, when you're sitting on the regulatory side, it's not easy to understand the impact on the other side. For example, there's been issues about the cost of regulation, the burden of regulation. If you don't see it as a whole, if you see the regulations piecemeal, you will not see the effect on the cost. I'm also bringing my customer management experience. I have seen how ICASA complaints, you know, the type of complaints that are raised with ICASA are on the quality of service, are on billing problems, are on access to services by people with disabilities. I'm bringing that experience as well. But mostly I'm bringing also the synergies between policy and regulation as I've seen it play out in the market. What is said in the policy and how it is interpreted in regulation and how it plays out when it's put in the market.
Honorable Dr. Ndlovu.
Thanks, Chairperson. I'd have... There's a VITS entry here of... is it your thesis or a book on ICASA?
My research paper for my master's program.
Yes. You're from VITS. It's a real university, that. It's possibly the only university in South Africa. Now, I think this thing of many players in the market leading to the reduction of price in general is possibly a very misleading policy position. And the evidence is the recent debates. I mean, there are so many players in the U.S. market, and the prices for communication are much higher than the, let's say, U.K. So you've got two markets in which there's multiple players. The other one is the prices are low, the other one the prices are up. That's the only point I want to converse with you. What do you think is at issue there? What do you think is happening there? And let's hear. We'll hear if you are.
So, I said earlier that the net effect of this current licensing process of spectrum is unknown to me. In my view, the debate has always been on the cost of rolling out infrastructure. Now, on the basis that operators had to refarm their spectrum, had to increase their base because spectrum could only stretch that far. But that is not the only access.
But is it true? Why is that not the case in Nigeria?
I will rely on the findings of the ComCom as the experts in that kind of inquiry, because it relates to the input cost that was presented.
But that's what the industry has always said, that it's input costs based on infrastructure. It's not the experience in the continent.
And
why is the infrastructure here leading to high prices, but the infrastructure didn't in the continent?
I also have a view that it's the economics of the country as well. And it's the okay, let me deal with the economics of the country first and say it has always baffled me how when you have more people on a service, it does not translate to cheaper, because then you have your volume on that service. It would seem as if the more people are using the service, the more the service becomes expensive. Now, I tend to think that because of the history of our market, there has been a tendency of raising those input costs to a point where it relates to profits. And cutting down means cutting down profits. That's my one view. It's not based on any empirical information. The other view is that not as many people in this country can afford data services at the same rate that you'd probably be able to account for the volumes. What I'm saying is still very few, concentrated few, can afford your data services. Now, the rest of the market that is excluded from contributing to the cost of
okay.
Infrastructure.
I think it's going to take long.
Yeah.
You're taking a long way. You. I think a lot of these people in your industry have a lot of dishonesty. I mean, it doesn't make sense, the story of South Africa. But I wanted you to comment on a basic philosophical point.
Yeah.
The problem is that when there are more actors, or when there are more service providers, there will be a reduction of prices. When in the U.S. is the situation, and over the past 4 or 5 years, prices have become very huge. I wanted you to deal with that, that the promise in South Africa is that when spectrum is allocated, there's competition, there's going to be data prices that fall. Why will that happen in South Africa? Why will more players in South Africa reduce prices and it doesn't in the U.S.?
More players?
Because you also believe in that.
No, I said it should be the principle that the more you have, that's the principle that is being presented, that let us force service-based competition. But I also said the cost of operating for these smaller players, it still comes at a cost. Now, we have to find probably a mechanism that's going to start them off, that they can be effective players. Otherwise, they're just going to be squeezed to a point where they can't survive. I still think that the price of data is still in the hands of the bigger operators.
What must be done? I mean, what? If you are in ICASA now, you discover that more players in the market is not helping. High spectrum demand has been rolled out, still prices are high. I think that's what's going to happen. Then what's going to be your policy perspective or your policy position if prices are still high after those two interventions, which are not interventions anyway, but let's say they are? what is going to be the role of the, what would you say the regulator must do if prices are high still?
I saw in the obligations that are put with the licensing of the spectrum, and I had reservations with regards to one intervention that says you first go and roll out services in the rural before you can roll them out in the urban areas. And I said there is still access to services, but it's not the cost of the service. And then it, and that speaks to now universal service and access, but I'm not too sure about the affordability part of it. I'm not too sure what the price is going to look like. And also the mechanism that...
No, I want to know what your policy would be. Let's say high demand spectra is rolled out, and then we still have a situation where prices are still high, and there are, let's say, 7 more players, but the prices are still high. What would be your policy intervention? Because I think that's what's going to happen. Because it's not, in my view, true. And I'm giving you the example of the United States, which doesn't have the problems we have. It has, like, super competition, but the prices are high. What's going to be your policy?
Okay. My proposed policy would then be that, and I'm saying if it's possible also to roll back the licenses, because I don't think that is possible, although it says they may be revoked. But I would have thought that if spectrum belonged to a consortium, like it was proposed in the Warren, and services, only service providers would come and buy, but at a very reduced price, because the cost of access is going to also, access to spectrum is also going to affect the cost to the customer. Also, what goes into the price of data is not just spectrum access. It's things like your distributions, your, you know, management of the whole service value chain. If you look at, once you have the spectrum, once you have the fiber, the reason why it would be cheaper, for example, to go on wireless and not on cable would, is on the basis that reduce the cost of managing your infrastructure so that your cost of service becomes...
No, cheaper. I get, like, I mean, once five generation, you know, mobile network comes, it's going to be inevitable that operators have to share infrastructure. But when the prices don't go down, what's going to be your policy? That's my question.
That's why I was saying that you then look at what contributes to this high data cost. Isn't that we would have dealt with now, currently? The argument is that spectrum must be released. Now, the question is, after spectrum is released and the data cost doesn't come down, what then? And I'm saying, we then further look into what is contributing to the cost of data, other than access to spectrum. And remember, a service value chain includes your access to market as one thing, your number of people that are sitting on an service provider's salary bill, for example. Those are the costs that are worked into the final cost to the company.
Okay, my last question, am I done? Oh, I thought because I did not ask questions the other time.
No, there's no recovery. You wait.
Oh, can't I do the
in
last
that
one?
That candidate, so there's no saving of that time.
Oh, I can't ask the last one.
You have, your minute is over by, your 5 minutes is over by a minute already on this question. Honorable Kubeka.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much. And also let me welcome the presentation of Matt Gillett. You know, sometimes also it's so impressive to just listen to Medical Lady as she was presenting a chair. I just want to understand the Medical Lady. If it was you, as you are trying to explain, especially on the side of the budget, in the ICASA, to say it seems as if it's still a challenge when coming to the issue of the budget, in order that you must have this public participation for informing actually the public about actually what about this the role of the regulators, as you are explaining. Do you think indeed it's the budget, it's less, it's not enough? And if it was you, what are you suggesting in order that that budget must manage to cover whatever that it's supposed to cover?
Thanks, Honorable Kubeka, for the question. I don't have the actual budget, but looking at the ICASA's mandate, it's quite broad. And what is key, what I think we ICASA needs to at least succeed in doing is being functionally effective. And by that I mean, you look at the quality of the regulation, that, you know, the regulation can regulate, can be implementable. Now, what goes into that piece of regulation is the capacity of your staff members, for example. Now, that is, for me, what would make ICASA look much, much better to where it is today. I'm just saying, if we were to add, you know, further improvements to it. It's functional effectiveness. But I thought also that if you took away the burden of court cases as well, where they are as a result of maybe stakeholder interest, political interest, whatever, and ICASA is taken to court, there's a budget that goes to court, which ICASA could have been spending elsewhere. If you look at competition issues, I would have thought that put competition issues where competition budget is, with the competition regulator, so that ICASA can focus on licensing, quality of service, making, you know, the customer to benefit directly from those kind of services. And competition issues, let it be, you know, between operators somewhere in another forum where the mandate sits, in my view. That would reduce the budget constraints. Then another issue that's escaping me now. But yeah, so then it would, it's the funding model that I want to speak to. That ICASA now gets a budget appropriation, but ICASA also, I'm thinking of a funding model that allows ICASA maybe a certain percentage of government funding, a certain percentage of its own raising its own funds. Obviously within the prescripts of the PFMA, but where ICASA can then have its budget for some special projects and use the government's budget for some public mandate, something like that. Because I thought that if ICASA is going to rely on the budget given to it, it can only do so much with that budget. Then it means it must prioritize its functions. And amongst those functions is market reviews. Those market reviews inform the final decision, and they are lacking because of the budget constraints.
Well, medical aid, if I'm saying I'm appointing you tomorrow in this industry, what can you do, or can you come up maybe something that you can see that maybe it's leaking here in this industry? Just within 60 days, what can you do?
What is lacking, it's from different angles. Wearing a consumer hat, I see a lot of what consumers could be knowing to enable them to understand, for example, what they are paying for. A lot of times, consumers don't even know what they are buying when they buy data. They don't know how far it must take them. Some don't even know how to use their cell phones. My mother, being an elderly, she says to me her data always disappears. But I find that she's fiddling with her phone and probably pressing other things, and the data just goes. But nobody's stealing the data. So I have a very strong interest in educating the public, especially about how far-reaching access to data is, but how to maximize that access. Because, I'll always say, so what I would say is lacking, is missing, is that consumer knowledge, understanding. For example, there's a consumer that says she's being pot out, but she doesn't understand potting. And she's blaming the wrong service provider. And I'm saying, now, if this customer understood very well what has affected her, she would have resolved the problem faster, quicker. So the public knowledge of, especially now going into this digital space, I'm worried that we may just lose part of this community to this digital future.
Thank you.
Mlana?
Yeah, thanks, Chair. Medically, I must first thank the presentation that you made. I think it's short and precise, as other colleagues have said, straight to the point. However, I'm interested in two issues. And they relate to the balance between what we call public interest and profit making in the industry. Because the struggle of our debate in the main, if you listen to all the discussion right through the interviews, it's about how do we access our people to this service, because it's becoming a reality. 4IR is a reality. Everybody's on internet. How do we show that even those who are at the most rural have access? On the other side, we have given a monopoly to the industry. It's us who have given the monopoly to the industry. Have allowed them thus far. Now they have they are in control, if you like. Now, how do we balance the two? Because at the end of the day, I want to ask Honorable Ndlozi's question, but in a different way. How do we ensure that we catch up the speed? At the same time, we don't compromise the business interest, because they are also there to make their money. If you fiddle with their money, obviously they will have to counter. That's why they are taking it to court, because they also want their profit. So it's a struggle, it's a continuous struggle. But we need a balance so that both parties, the public can benefit and they can also make their profit. They must not see us as people who want to take away their entire profit. So if you can comment on that. The second one is on your views, because there's a bullet here, a closer working relationship between regulators to coordinate and avoid institutional duplication. which has happened in this case on Competition Commission and ICASA, though everyone who comes here is refusing to take sides. They are always telling me, or see, we've consulted, but the output shows that ICASA has their report, Competition Commission has their report. And this relates to convergence. Because sometimes you say, I heard you saying the competition must go to where competition is. But the challenge with that is that you might find that the expertise are not there. They are here with ICASA. ICASA is the one that has the expertise to evaluate the type of work this industries are doing. Competition Commission may not be that skilled. You may have people who are doing, because they are doing general competition. So it means they don't have specific expertise, unlike these ones that we say they are regulating the particular industry because they have expertise. But I would also like you to comment on that further so that I understand. I'll understand you better. So on those two questions, I think I will be fine.
Honorable Malala, may I start with your second question with regards to co-regulation? So it is the legislative mandate prescribes what ICASA must do and what other regulators must do. In my slide on the institutional design, I explained the single sector regulation versus your multi-sector regulation. And to my point regarding competition, if it were to be that the competition mandate is taken out of ICASA to sit at the Competition Commission, likewise with ICASA, the requisite skills is what improves functional effectiveness. It doesn't matter what design, if it's not well resourced, it will not function. So it's my view that we can even amend the legislation, but if we do not put the right resources, budget, skills, especially to deal with the issues that we want to confront, then it will not function. Now, that relates back to your first question that says, how do we then strike a balance between public interest and profits? And that balancing act is one of your challenging ones, because it has gone so far that to reverse the process seems to be impossible. The market is concentrated in the hands of those that were given licenses earlier. The new entrants are going to have to compete in the same environment with probably lesser resources. Now, somebody carries the public mandate here, and somebody is a commercial operator. Yet, through your universal service access obligations, it's as if you're enforcing that public mandate on the commercial operator. But we have seen how this universal access and service framework has not been that effective. It is my view that it needed to be constantly reviewed. If you look at the universal, I can't remember what the document was. There was a review that was initiated many years ago. They were supposed to identify the true market access gap, you know, so that regulation is placed where it's needed. And you cannot just apply a blanket approach to universal service and access. So whilst you may not want to disturb the profits, but you may want to insist on a public mandate through certain structures like your universal service and access obligations, license obligations. Monitor them. You know, we're good at putting the strategy in place, but implementation and monitoring then does not happen until way later. I would think that then you'd want to, as a public interest issue, you'd want to put resources, mechanisms that will help you track that license obligations are being fulfilled. That, you know, universal service access does meet its own intended objectives. And that would be another resource constraint on the regulator if that was to be prioritized.
I'm happy with the response, but that's another area that I wanted to ask you about, the OTT services, because I think there's an outcry that these services are operating across the globe, including in our country. No government, no state is able to tax these people, neither regulate them. Now, I want your view on that, because there's an outcry that we having access to these WhatsApps and so on and whatever, OTT, but they are not regulated. They're just flowing across our faces. Now, what would be your views on that? Do you perhaps have a strategy in long term? Because by now, I think there's quite a lot of them, and they have actually taken over the role of the state in a way. If I was an astute socialist like my learned friend, I would be fighting that no, we must go back to our socialist principles, because actually these networks have actually eroded the role and influence in many societies, whether you like it or not. We are already influenced by how these networks have evaded. Now, what is your view on the OTTs?
The issue on OTTs is complicated by the fact that they are on the internet layer. And nobody regulates that internet layer. Now, I have seen models where, due to that complication, that you can't even text them. The fact of the matter is they are known. OTTs that are operating are known. I feel as if there has not been a concerted effort to bring them into an agreement of some sort. Because they are not licensed, they are not answerable to anyone. And now they have caused this stickiness that everybody now is on WhatsApp. A late reaction, maybe, but the fact of the matter is it's happening right now. I would not want to do away with OTTs, but I would rather say maybe encourage different business models. Maybe encourage a different debate that says, if an OTT has access to your a consumer, that is a South African consumer, what accountability, what contribution to the economy can they, you know, and as if it's an agreement between parties, because I don't think we have a legislative regime that we can rely on to control them, but we can't wish them away, they're here. And I think they've enhanced and forced the market to move on and change the dynamics. So my only thinking around it is that maybe it's about time that OTTs are invited to a working agreement. I have no clue what it looks like, but I'm just thinking.
No, thanks. For me, just one question with regard to spectrum.
just to tap from your 22 years experience and where the country is at this point in time, just on the timelines that have been put on the release of the spectrum, your view, are these possible? If yes, why? If you think we're not yet there, why do you think so? You think just based on your 22 years experience in the field?
22 years in another... I actually reflected on the minister's budget vote speech yesterday about the 30 billion, and I was thinking, so when is the spectrum going to be auctioned? Precisely because, and you know, so already there's a timeline that I also reflected on. Seeing that ICASA has decided to go out with an information memorandum, and understanding also that, you know, this is not just a quick process that you get over and done with, because once spectrum is assigned, it's assigned. It then is in the hands of those licensees. There's another issue about the digital dividend spectrum that's still locked in. That process also impacts on the timelines. The sooner that digital dividend spectrum is released, the spectrum is available. But the spectrum also that is available now, some of it is in the hands of the operator, one operator particularly. There are complications about how that spectrum needs to be assigned. So, to your question, I think it's good that there is intent to get the process going, but it's also good that ICASA listens and considers the final impact of the licensing of the spectrum. I'm not overly ambitious that we will stick to the timelines, but I think it is more accelerated than it was before. There is at least some movement.
It's quite diplomatic. trying to balance, but as I said, I wanted to take from your own opinion in a way. I'm saying you've looked at the market, you've seen how things have been happening, you've looked at policy decisions that have been made over time, and we now have gone to that part. Policy directive, we now have the information memorandum, but there are timelines that have been pronounced. I think, as I said, the engagement is also about learning in the process. In your opinion, I'm saying without being diplomatic about, do you think timelines can be attained? And if you think so, why? If you think not, why? You know, in the minutes that you have.
My answer is we may run late. Or should I be direct and say, I think we are going to run late, slightly late, due to the reasons given that some of the spectrum is still sitting in the digital dividend. Some of the spectrum is being used by other operators at the moment. So I think we are going to run slightly late, but not 5 years late. there's one timeline, I think, that we've already missed, March 2020. We're not going to make that timeline.
Thanks for the answer. I wanted your opinion, so you've given me. In that score, honorable members, we have engaged the questions, and I think we'd have had responses. I'll just give you a minute just to say your closing points, whatever you want to say to the committee, and then formally thank you.
Okay, from my side, I'd like to thank the opportunity for being shortlisted. It's a great exposure for me to have to think about such a robust industry. you know, wearing a hat of a prospective counselor, and I appreciate that. And I think it has, this process has led me to now want to consider matters further.
Thanks, Ms. Dikeledi Mushi. Administrative matters will then be dealt between you and the support staff as they were interacting with you. Once again, thanks for engaging with us.